Well, you know, any opportunity to engage in the subject matter, you know, like these, is an honor, you know, to meet people who are willing to open up their lives to you and allow you to come in to, you know, to tell a story or to even explore. It's a true honor, you know what I mean? And the beauty of those relationships is oftentimes what drives me.
Welcome back to Produce By. This is Kevin Fairchild, and I'm joined today by Keith McWhorter, award-winning producer in TV, documentary, new media, and commercials, whose latest film is Milwaukee 53206. Keith, welcome.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Also joining us is Nick Stewart, president of Transform Films and its parent company, Odyssey Impact. Nick, welcome.
Thanks, Kevin. Good to be here as well.
Keith, if we could start with you, can you tell us a bit more about your latest project, Milwaukee 53206, and how you became involved in it?
Sure. So Milwaukee 53206 is a 55-minute documentary about incarceration. We wanted to, when Transform Films and I sat down, you know, we wanted to do a film that would address the, you know, that would be part of the conversation in the nation about what's happening in mass incarceration, what is it, how can we raise consciousness about it. And the zip code of 53206, through research of the University of Wisconsin, had designated this as the most incarcerated zip code in America for black men. And so once we had those statistics, those numbers, we went there. And so I've spent a number of months doing research, just going back and forth and just talking with people, to nonprofit groups, men and women who were formerly incarcerated, families with incarcerated loved ones, and I just started hearing their stories. And through that process, the story emerged as, you know, this is a story about who's missing at the dinner table and what's the impact to a family with a loved one missing, and what's the impact to a community with so many loved ones missing. So that's how the film got started. And then, over the course of months, we more some more research, and so all in all, it was about 14 months of research and production before we have our final product of the film.
I had the chance to see the film, and one of the things I loved about it is the way you take on the issue of mass incarceration, not from what would be the most obvious way of listing statistics and talking head interviews, but you really get into the heart of the issue by showing the impact it has had on families in the community. Was that decision there from the beginning, or did it come about after you had started production?
You know, it came out, and it was an idea that we had at the beginning of the research. It didn't come to full fruition until the stories became more realer and realer. And I think what happened with me is that when you're face to face with people in their living rooms and talking about, you know, the impact of incarceration in their lives, it becomes, you know, glaringly a real thing, emotionally real. And so I knew that we were on the right track. You know, in 55 minutes, we don't have the capacity to tell an overarching, in-depth look at mass incarceration in the country. It's just too huge of a monster to do in 55 minutes. But what I did know is that we could tell a story that is a human story about relationships, and that we could get across that, you know, this is not just about numbers and statistics. These are real people with real names, real personalities, real lives, who are impacted by incarceration that we don't get to hear from, you know. And to really take those stories and to humanize the issue so that people can learn, can understand that this is not just some sort of problem out there, but this is a real moral and political crisis that we're facing.
I think you're spot on with that, Keith. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely spot on with that. I mean, it's one of the hallmarks, I hope, of Transform Films is that we deal with issues, but at a human level. You know, you bring an issue to the table, and the danger is that it gets politicized straight away, and then you get subverted away from the real problem, the real challenge, as the tribes divide up on often political grounds. The other way is, again, you can throw as many statistics as you like at people, But ultimately, we're very social beings and we relate to people. We relate to the human aspect behind the issue. And I mean, Keith, you know, I think both you and I and all the audiences, we've been amazed and very pleased that, you know, that these characters that come out of Milwaukee 53206, the human aspect of that, especially a character like Beverly, whose husband is incarcerated and she's got to look after her mum who's ill and bring up children and grandchildren. And you just see what mass incarceration means on a day-to-day level at a human level.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you also get the sense that the stories and lives of these people is incredibly complex, even outside of the impact of the mass incarceration.
Absolutely. It was to do with the impact on community that I initially wanted to do this and spoke to Keith, and Keith came on board and wanted to do this as well, in the sense that, you know, I've made quite a few films in my career about criminal justice and especially about prisons. And you know, whenever you try and move the needle, get change, and you're up against, you know, people who are for the status quo in the system, and you go, well, look, hang on a second, you know, the person who did this crime, he was 18 or he was 19, whatever it was, and you throw him his life away for life, and they go, he shouldn't have done the crime. And they're right. okay, well, what about the family? You know, they're also serving time in effect. And they go, well, you know, the guy should have thought about it beforehand. And I thought, how else to get to those people? And I thought, I know what's so important. It's community. So I want to make a film that shows you what impact the mass incarceration has on community, which is the fabric of America.
Mm-hmm. What is your intended audience for this film?
There are a lot of people who are on the grounds and the grassroots level and on the policy level who are working to make change, to make reforms. You know, in regards to criminal justice system. But what's really needed is to really uproot this whole system by its roots. You know, we're not just talking about, you know, just a few people getting a few people on their feet. I mean, it's a system that has devastated for generations communities. And so, you know, these men and women who are on the grounds working day in and day out, and often a thankless job, you know, they're trying to make an impact, but, you know, and they're making impact in small ways oftentimes. But, you know, as the nation wakes up, you know, and the nation is waking up to this issue, you know, just 5 years ago, no one knew what mass incarceration was. Now people are able to talk about it and know something about it. So it's moving through, you know, the consciousness of the country, but we're still not at a tipping point with it yet. And we still have a ways to go before we get there. So, you know, if anything, I hope Milwaukee 53206 will do is help raise consciousness, get people to get more interested in the subject matter. The more this our country, our population knows about these issues and understands them on a level that's emotional, that they are connected to this issue, no matter if their immediate family is incarcerated, they're still impacted by these vast numbers, you know, I hope there's an awakening. I hope Milwaukee 53206 can be a part of that. You know, the New York Times reported just last year that 1.5 million black men are missing from society due to early death and incarceration. And when we talk about 1.5 million people, it means nothing to any of us because none of us have seen 1.5 million people in one sitting. But if you go to, like, you know, any of these big amphitheaters or even these sports arenas where you see tens of thousands of people sitting at once to enjoy the sports events, you can kind of get an idea and say, okay, well, if everyone in this arena is incarcerated, holy crap, what does that look like? You know what I mean? There's that emotional disconnect there. Even when the numbers are so staggering, it's just like, what does that mean to anyone? So I think the first thing is to bring up awareness. Once awareness is there, people start getting engaged, bringing their own talents to the table, and getting more involved in how to you know, chip away at this mammoth problem, you know?
Nick, let's talk a little bit about Serving Life as well. I think it's an interesting companion to Milwaukee 53206. Can you talk about it a bit more and how it came about?
Well, I came over on the boat about 9 years ago from the UK, where I had been running a production company. And just before I came over, I came across a story about a warden at Angola, Louisiana State Penitentiary, who had created a sort of new approach to what was regarded as the worst jail in the South, the hardest of the hard. And he'd started a seminary in there that, lifers, and there are 5,000 people there. Most of them will die there. Most of them are life without parole. And he started a seminary where I'm thinking, this is unusual that, people serving life, either for murder or drugs or whatever it was, would suddenly take a course in how to become a minister. And I thought, there's a story there, but I couldn't access it from the UK particularly well. So the first thing I did when I came over was say, look, let's look at this. And a director I sent in who'd filmed in Angola before came back and said, look, there's an even better story. There's a prison hospice there, which has been set up by the warden. And he started a system where these people serving life, these inmates serving life, can learn how to be what I call a death buddy, i.e., be there for the dying inmate in their last days and weeks, talking to them, giving basic care. And I thought, wow, this is a story, because society, they throw lives away in many ways. You commit a crime, depending on how deep that crime is, then you could get put away for life and society forgets about you. But I just wanted to know if, there could be compassion within those people whose lives society decided were so worthless that they're going to put them away. And so we looked at six inmates who started this course of caring for the dying inmates in the in Angola jail, and we followed them for about 6 months, and we worked with Forrest Whitaker, and we managed to get it on the OWN network, and that's how our first doc started here. That's the one that kicked it off, and for Odyssey and Transform. And at that stage, it was, it was a 90-minute, it was a feature doc. We were looking, I think, to do more in broadcast and cable. But then we started to take a look a little more at independent feature docs. And we moved a little more in that direction about 4 years ago.
How do you work with the people in your films?
Well, I approach them with, honestly. I come to them and say, If I'm interested in their story, like the character you've seen from Milwaukee 53206, I'll have just a frank conversation with them, and say, I think you have a story, and I want to, if you're interested in telling it, I want to partner with you. I consider all the people who I engage with as creative partners, collaborators. Because I can't tell their story for them. They have to tell their own story, is how I feel. And so without that shared understanding, it doesn't work. So, each character or each family, there's a dating process that takes place. They have to get familiar. Production, so what's the word? It's a big intervention in someone's life. I mean, there's cameras and there's people, and so they have to get used to that process and actually want to be around that and engage with it, or else it won't work. So we, from my end, I'm dating each subject in the film to see if we can get along, if we like each other, if they're authentic, if they're not trying to showboat, if they're not trying to pretend. Have to look very carefully for those things, and from their end, they're just saying that who I am and who the crew is and what this whole process is. And if it works, it works. And there were a lot of people it didn't work for, So there's a lot of people who didn't make it into the film that we spent time with, for that very reason.
Nick, how about you? What is your production philosophy?
Yeah, I think I've run production companies which have been quite small, really. over the years, and it's been, you know, very hard to compete with the big production companies, with the big bucks, the big numbers, etc. And I think the approach I've always had, and certainly I hope have brought to Transform Films and Odyssey, as Keith was talking about, important element of trust. But it's all about access, getting in at a very, very deep level.
Yeah.
I think if anything defines our films, it's about that depth of engagement. You know, we are in a remarkable position as filmmakers. You know, people allow us into their lives, but, you know, they, as it were, somebody once said to me, you know, you mess with the stuff of people's souls. And we do. We ask them to bear their souls to us. Mm-hmm. And we have a deep responsibility of care for them, as Keith was talking about. I only like working with directors who get that, because if you betray that, you lose the access. And then, you know, there's no way back after that. You know, if you look at Serving Life, you know, the access we got there was literally into the death space,
yeah,
of another human being. Newtown, the remarkable work of Kim Snyder, to take on the trust of a community devastated by the loss of their little children. That was huge. And what Keith did so remarkably well in Milwaukee was go into people's lives. You know, I mean, we're often outsiders, and no matter how much we like to think we have empathy, and hope, please God, we do. But we're outsiders. You know, oh, you're the guys from New York coming down to look at, you know, the most incarcerated zip code in America. How are you just coming in and showing people, you know, what a tough life we have?
Right.
You know, that is not the film we wanted to make. And what I was so pleased when we discovered Keith was he didn't want to make that one either. you know, my background is mainly news, or, you know, when I'm in my 20s and 30s. You know, I know how that works. You know, you go in with preconceived ideas. Here's the most incarcerated zip code in America. It must be awful. Let's take pictures of it being awful. And then bang, you know, you've got a news 30-second, 2-minute story or whatever. But again, to Keith's credit, he really fought against that, and we didn't want him to make that sort of film anyway. And, you know, to answer one of your earlier questions as well, you know, our films are not about victims presented as victims, human beings on the ropes. Clearly, you have to put it across, because that's, in a way, the issue. You know, everything is not rosy. But as Keith was saying, you can do something. Let's be inspired by the people in these films, because they haven't given in. And
no,
that's what our
yeah.
films want to lift up.
And I think the community, too, I was going to say, just the community, you know, Milwaukee itself, I-3206, I mean, the level of support that's needed to have access goes beyond just what you see in the film. I mean, you're talking to the people who support the communities, you know, the clergy, the business people, the some of the politicians even, and the teachers, and, you know, other parents. Because when you go into a community, you need that full support, as much of support you can get, because a community like Milwaukee, like 53206, is very suspicious of media, because they've been burned so badly in the past, over and over again. So, you know, for a lot of people, you know, we were rejected right off the bat, because they wanted nothing to do with this New York, you know, fancy pants filmmaker coming in telling the story about their life, you know. And so there's a lot of obstacles in regards to that. And I think over the course of time, the team, we did a really good job in breaking through, you know.
I mean, this is the deep respect. This is the deep respect that I have, I think, for independent documentary filmmakers. That they go out and they really care. They live amongst the people whose lives they're picking up and showing to society. You know, Keith, I think you could probably get voting rights, I think, in Milwaukee now. You've been there so much in the last 2 or 3 years.
I should definitely have a house there, that's for sure. Or some sort of apartment or something.
You'll be paying tax. You know you're going to get a local tax bill,
don't you? So let's take a step back for a second. Keith, how did you get started in the business?
So I went to film school, and while I was in film school, I started working in the industry, you know, as PA jobs or assistant editing jobs, that sort of thing. So when I graduated, I went right into production. I developed a hybrid career pretty early in my working life, where I was working in the commercial advertising space, but also working in the independent film and documentary space. So I would go between the two, So here's how I got started with documentaries. I was working at a production company in Los Angeles, and I was doing a lot of the behind the scenes work, a lot of the marketing work for the big studios in Los Angeles. And Sony Studios being one of the biggest clients that we had. And so, you know, when we had DVDs and DVDs had those like, you know, behind the scenes, it's happening behind this movie, I was doing those sorts of things. And it wasn't very fulfilling, it wasn't very creative, and I was actually kind of rotting doing it. And so when the DVX-100 camera came out, I don't know if you remember how exciting that was for filmmakers, because it's like the first time digital cinema looked like, you know, film. I got one of those cameras, and I started doing these short documentaries all over the place. And I did this one about burlesque dancing in Vegas, a crazy kind of story, and got picked up by... Al Gore, his former network, current TV, I don't remember that network, it no longer exists. And so they said they liked my work, and they put me in contract to do a series of these documentaries. So I started doing all these short documentaries for them. And then that got me noticed, and I started, and when I moved back to New York, I started working with Mark Levin on Brick City. And that's what really kind of propelled me into the documentary space.
And Nick, what about you?
Yeah, it's quite different than Keith. I use the well-trodden path for future filmmakers of doing a degree in theology and philosophy. it was a very unusual choice. But I did it, and, you know, soon after, I mean, I'd always liked photography. I'd also liked... I liked news, and basically I got a break and went into radio, and became a news editor in radio, and ITV network in the UK back in the late 80s. Suddenly wanted a new approach to religion, looking at through the lens of current affairs. It was at a moment when, you know, Hamas was just beginning to evolve. Churches, I think, religions were getting playing crucial roles in the fall of communism, the end of apartheid, and so I got a lucky break. I got my own TV show, and they sent me around the world looking at these, you know, seismic changes in geopolitics and culture, and, you know, so they put me in Moscow and Leipzig and Berlin and, you know, Jerusalem and Gaza Strip. You know, I travel the world doing that. And, you know, I think that really gave me a sense that the power of religion to break and make, empires needed a little more looking at. It wasn't just a freak show. And so I think, you know, I brought that experience and interest, I think, with me over here to the U.S., and the other part of Odyssey, Odyssey Impact, which runs the Impact campaigns, part of its approach is to try and bring together, you know, faith organizations working for social justice with, you know, secular-based organizations, because they're basically working for the same thing. They want justice. They want change. They want to reach out and lift up the humanity of people and shine spotlights on the injustices. And then to support those who are being crushed by these injustices. So although we never make films which, you know, are overtly, let's say, religious, the essence of what religion and an awareness of the importance of justice can bring, I think creates a really strong dynamic force for change.
Yeah, let's talk a little bit about that idea of documentary as a force for social change. I mean, it certainly has been demonstrated that it can be highly effective, but in order for it to really reach its peak effectiveness, it has to get outside of the built-in audience. How do you, as documentary filmmakers, try to reach the audiences that need to see these films in order to make the greatest impact?
You know, I think, you know, I'm going to draw on Newtown a bit here as well as Milwaukee. Yeah. You know, I think one of the important things about a film is to be able to get the viewer to empathize. You know, that could be me up there, or that could be my child, or, you know, yeah, there, but to the grace of God go I, sort of thing. And, you know, when obviously Impact take these films on the road for the Impact campaigns, for example, you know, there's often a panel afterwards, and more often than not, we try to bring the director or somebody from the cast to talk. But I've been to one or two where, you know, we couldn't do that because, you know, people like Keith are busy people and, you know, they can't drop everything and then rush off to all these screenings as much as they'd love to. And I was one at a screening in Chatham on Cape Cod, and the local community hired the local theater. And they brought along the local Chatham chief of police and the local Chatham-based school superintendent, and, you know, the people whose roles you saw on the screen from Newtown, they were there on the panel afterwards. And I remember the first question I posed to the chief of police, and he said, "Oh my God, that's us." And I think it was really interesting, you know, how they connected. And the same with Milwaukee. You know, in many ways, you just have to look around and just go on the web, and you'll see that, wow, mass incarceration affects me as well. And, you know, just around the corner, there's somebody whose husband or wife or whatever, mother, father, is incarcerated. Mass incarceration is not unique to Milwaukee. Everyone has a Beverly. Everyone has a Barron. And it's our job to let people see that.
Yeah. You know, I was going to say, documentary films, you know, they expose an injustice, and I think for people of conscience who see this, they can no longer ignore that injustice. So it calls for people to wake up and to take some sort of action, you know. And you know, with Milwaukee and the Impact campaign, it's been going on. It's been hitting audiences that, you know, I think Milwaukee, I feel like, is a really blessed experience, you know, as far as how it's been, the Impact campaign has been working, in the sense that oftentimes documentaries are, you know, the coastal progressives often see these documentaries, but no one else sees these, you know, and that's true. But in the experience of Milwaukee, it's been going into communities all over the Midwest and all over the country, Northeast, South, that wouldn't ordinarily have these dialogues. And I think the beauty of that is that they're sitting in one room together. Even though, you know, we don't have, you know, distribution like Lowell's Cinemas and, you know, the AMCs, these are happening in churches, these are happening in community centers, these are happening in business offices and government offices. And, you know, the feedback that we're hearing is really extraordinary, you know. In one particular, you know, there was a screening particularly for the direct Department of Corrections, and so some of the people who manage the parole systems, they showed up and they saw the movie, and they came in. I was told they came in with some pre expectations of what this was going to be, a sob story about the incarcerated being the victim. But they came out with a whole different perspective, and they said, one person said, you know, I've been working as a parolee for X amount of years and never even thought about the family aspect of what my job entails, which is mind-blowing to me. But, you know, that's just the day-to-day of someone's work, that they just don't think about the facts that how many people's lives are actually impacting. Beyond that, you know, in Milwaukee in particular, the language has been changing, in the sense the district attorney said, do you know what you've done? So what do you mean? He goes, you branded 53206. He goes, when people talk now, they have a shorthand. When they say 53206, everyone knows what that means now. And people use it just as that shorthand. And what it's doing now is it's affecting policy. It's affecting businesses now. And there's a whole outreach with the nonprofit foundation workers who are moving into 53206, because now everyone wants it. Now 53206 is a zip code to save. You know what I mean? So it's in the state of Wisconsin, the state of Milwaukee it has enormous impact, it seems. Across the country, we definitely see that, you know, there's an emotional shift around the issue.
So it sounds like instead of going the route of a larger, wider release, your focus is maybe to take it into the community, and making sure that there's some way of having a dialogue right then and there while the people are watching the film, which makes it far more intimate and participatory.
You're absolutely right, Kevin. It's interesting you pick up on that. About 4 years ago, we set off with a plan, a 3 or 4 year plan, to make really 3 documentaries. And 2 were what I called documentaries from above. What I mean by that is that, you know, we did aim straight away to try and get, you know, onto an HBO or theatrical release or, you know, into the film festivals and win the Oscar. You know, that was the plan, or the hope. And we had a little bit of money left over from our sort of war chest. And, you know, this issue of mass incarceration was one that I picked up that so many people across the divides were beginning to unite around. And so that's what a documentary, it didn't have as much funds as Newtown and After Fire, a story on returning women veterans. But it became a doc, what I call a documentary from below. Its a distribution mechanism was what Keith's talking about, taking it to local communities and congregations and events and organizations. And if, you know, God willing, it was a good film, then, you know, then maybe it might get picked up. So it would go from the grassroots up to the top. Whilst Newtown, for example, was one we always aimed, you know, for a mainstream, a large mainstream pickup. And then through association, it would work its way down to the grassroots. And what we've been so excited is this little film, we call it the little film that can. You know, it cost far less than the other 2 feature docs. I mean, it is shorter, it's 55, not a sort of 85. But even so, it has exceeded all our expectations and shows what you can do, I think, if you really have something that engages with people at a local level.
Well, you know, any opportunity to engage in the subject matter, you know, like these, is an honor, you know, to meet people who are willing to open up their lives to you and allow you to come in to, you know, to tell a story or to even explore. It's a true honor, you know what I mean? And the beauty of those relationships is oftentimes what drives me. You know, I think even when I was first starting off doing documentary films, I was always engaged with the people. You know, it wasn't a bird's eye looking down on the issue. It was always with in the action of the people, of the subject matter. And I think that thrills me, especially when there's a message and a voice that needs to be heard that can impact, you know, a lot of people. Or if there's a story that needs to be told that a lot of people should know about. Storytelling at the root of it is what gets me excited, you know. The ability to have having the privilege to tell stories is a really exciting way to earn a living. It's a really exciting way to move through the world. I can't think of anything more. Well, for myself, I feel like I'm in the vibrancy I should be in, and so every day is really exciting for me. And moving forward, you know, I'm still looking to do new documentaries, but also do scripted content as well. We'll see. You know, you'll be seeing some of that in the coming years.
Yeah, I think for me, Kevin, so I'm older than Keith. I've got, you know, probably 20 years on you, Keith, but so in some ways, what I like, I'm going to appear somewhat Luddite at the moment, but I just get so excited about the opportunities that new technology is bringing us as storytellers. I mean, I think it's axiomatic, it's basic. If we're going to be good documentary makers, then Keith's absolutely right. You must honor that relationship, be in awe of it, that we can have these relationships with other human beings. I for many years, I had a TV show, and I would have to interview famous people. And to be honest, I loathed it. I really like ordinary people being extraordinary, and I find a richness there. That's not to decry, obviously, the celebs, but really, in some ways, those are gods we can't reach. But the people whose lives Keith lifts up are people I could meet in the street. And, no matter what my issues are, they show me a way where I needn't be crushed by them. I find what Keith's talking about there, I describe it as a calling rather than a job. I was just trying to describe to one of my daughters, Daddy, what do you do for a living? Why are you away so much? And saying, look, this isn't just a job. This is a calling. And, I am lucky enough in this life, to bring those two together. But I think, I went through a period in the UK, back in the certainly late 80s, early mid 90s, and towards the end of the 90s, where, if you came up with an idea and the BBC didn't want it, and ITV didn't want it, and Channel 4 didn't want it, then the next place for it was the bin. There was nowhere else to take it, And then, our laws changed a bit. We got rights to, or could have rights to, our ideas. But then, documentaries became, perceived as old hat, and let's make reality TV. And I remember coming to the States, and I was over in Los Angeles or somewhere, and I was in a surf shop. Don't ask me why, but and there was this young guy behind the counter, and he said, "What do you do?" And I thought, "Oh boy, I'm his granddad. I'm going to say documentaries," and he's going to say, "What are they?" And I said, "Oh, I make documentaries." He said, "Oh, I love documentaries. I watch them on Netflix." And I thought, wow, is this the rebirth of documentaries? And what I loved about the situation is the overtop solutions of people like Hulu and Amazon, for example, and the commitment that HBO gave as well to documentaries. But people like Amazon and Hulu and Netflix, they have the data at their fingertips. If they say docs are in, then docs are in. And all of them have created doc sections. So that's one thing I like about it. And the other is, being able to develop these impact campaigns and put them out there and see how people use the documentaries. We sometimes for the impact campaigns, if you haven't got time to watch the whole 85 minutes or 55 minutes, we might break out themes, little sections of the film, and talk about that, and then they're able to go out bite-sized elements, to be watched on your smartphone or whatever, and then picked up. And I love hearing from the audience, I got this and I did this with it. Mm-hmm. And the idea that, we used to be gods, we used to sit at the BBC or ABC or NBC or whatever as the gods and be prescriptive about how you watched, when you watched, what you watched. And now that humility has come in a bit. I think the realization has had to come in that, it's any time, any place, anywhere that the consumer, can and want and must have programming, as I say, whenever they want it and wherever they want it. And then they can do things with it that we'd never thought of. And that's so exciting.
Yeah, sometimes I wonder if documentary films have filled in some of the vacuum that was left behind with the loss of long-form journalism.
I think that's a really, really interesting observation. I think it's definitely, it can play that card. I mean, I think, one of the exciting challenges for us are things like attention spans and engagement. 90 minutes gives you that chance to really go and look at the nuances, etc. I mean, rolling news in some ways occurs because everything's breaking. Everything's got to break now. So the new elements.
And
you miss the depth. you know, the attention span, though, it's a challenge all the time, isn't it? We're looking at short form docs as well as long. Keith, are you doing short form as well as long form?
I have done short form. I mean, Milwaukee could be considered a short form in some regards. You know, it's 55 minutes, but so I've done plenty of short. That's how I got started my career in short form and documentary. Yeah, but also I think, you know, to your point, I think, you know, with the news being kind of so much about pop news, you know, and entertainment news, that, you know, people are perhaps, you know, hungry for something that's just real and not there to simply just entertain.
Yeah, something that has, it's far more deliberate, more thought through, researched, and not just an immediate reaction to what's going on, so that it has greater staying power.
Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, I think there's a really important point, I think, which really drives me, and which, you know, to your point, Kevin, I think about filling a gap that news may have left, is that democracy, for it to work, needs an informed electorate. And, you know, where is the electorate being informed? If it's just two news channels hurling mud at each other, then goodness knows where we're going to go. Democracy will fail, period.
Mm-hmm.
There has to be a way. And I think documentaries are leading the way in that.
Where can people find your work? And how can people contact you to schedule and book some of these community screenings and events?
Sure. So Milwaukee 53206 will have a broadcast premiere in April on America Reframed. It's a PBS outlet. So you can, we'll have updates on that, on our broadcast premiere, on our Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram accounts, but also on our webpage, which is Milwaukee53206.com. Also on the webpage, you'll find how you can set up a screening in your community, and you know, there's materials on the website that will help you facilitate that screening. And so we have a team, dedicated team, here that will help you get that up and running as well. So reach out to us if you're interested.
And details about screenings as well, and any of the outreach we do, you can get on odyssey-impact.org, odyssey-impact.org. And just fingers crossed for this weekend, our latest doc, which we made with Augusta Films, Nancy Bersky, The Rape of Recy Taylor, about the rights of women to walk through the world unmolested. That's up for an NAACP Impact Best Doc Award this weekend. So fingers crossed for that one.
Nice. And by the way, Recy Taylor was mentioned by Oprah in her very, you know, illuminating speech she made at the Golden Globes. So that was very exciting to hear her speak about Recy Taylor.
She did it. The director was sitting at home, listened to that, and just screamed her head off. I don't think she heard what Oprah said next. She just went, ah!
Well, it's a story that people definitely need to know, so I'm happy it's finally coming to light.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining me, and hopefully we'll get the chance to speak to you again.
Thank you
so
much, Kevin.
For thanks for the opportunity, Kevin.
Yeah.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Produced By. For more information about the Producers Guild, find us on the web at www.producersguild.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at Producers Guild. In the meantime, help us out by subscribing, commenting, and sharing wherever you get your podcasts. It helps other people find us and lets us know how we're doing. Until next time, I'm your host, Kevin Fairchild.